John Finnemore's souvenir program.
Mum, Dad, I've got something to tell you.
What is it, son?
Well, this is very hard for me to say, but I think it's time you knew the truth. Mum, Dad, you're not my real parents.
What?
Don't be silly, Brian.
I'm afraid it's true, but listen. This doesn't mean that anything has to change between us or that I love you any the less.
What do you mean, Brian? Of course we're your real parents.
We ought to know, Brian. We've raised you ever since you hatched from the egg.
I know you did, and that's why I'll always think of you as my parents. But the truth is, I'm a cuckoo.
a cuckoo?
That's right.
But we're starlings.
I know, ma'am. I know.
Then where are our real children?
Ah, now... this is awkward. Have you read We Need to Talk About Kevin?
Of course we haven't. We're starlings.
Never mind, then. The thing is, when we were fledglings, I might have slightly pushed them out of the nest.
You did what?
I know. I'm really sorry. In my defence, it's a Darwinian survival reflex.
Well, this is going to take some coming to terms with.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's a huge thing to find out.
I know. Take all the time you need. I'll be here. Although, also, I am hungry. Ah. Feed me. Ah. In here. Ah.
Ah. No, you. Go on, Dad. Fetch him a worm. Ah.
It was just an ordinary day. I was packing for my holiday when suddenly, out of nowhere, it happened. Choo!
You all right, sweetheart?
No, I think I'm getting a cold.
Oh, no. Where have you picked that up?
From... work.
Have you picked up a cold in the workplace? Call us now. Thousands of people every year pick up bugs from people they'd never even have met if they hadn't had to go to work. Alice here had a bunged up nose for nearly a week. We got her £11,000 in compensation. And that's not all. Has anything happened to you that you don't like? Well, that's not on. Call us now and let us figure out someone to blame. Ken had his feelings badly hurt in a flirting accident. And got £18,000. Ina trod in a puddle and now owns the city in which that happened. Now, no win, no fee, no need to stop and think about what sort of a person this makes you. Because when bad things happen to good people, other people should give them money. That's the way it's always been, except for always.
And now on Radio 4, unbelievably, it's time to accidentally hear a bit of the Archers again. Even though you could swear it's only been about 2 hours since it was last on.
Hello, one of the men who always sound tired.
Oh. Hello, one of the insufferably wry women.
And what have you been up to so tiredly? Or had I better not ask?
You can ask, it just won't be in any way interesting. As it happens, I've been sorting through 16 or 17 of the totally interchangeable teenagers. You know how they all pile up this time of year?
Don't I know it? Paul, or Stephen, or whoever I'm married to, has been bending my ear on the subject all morning.
Oh, dear.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah, well, that's life, isn't it?
It's the way of the world, I'm afraid.
I have to agree with you there. Well, that's killed another minute. I suppose I'd best be off.
Oh, must you go? I think one of the women with an accent is just making coffee. That's right, here I am now with some coffee. We
which you can hear if you don't believe me.
Hello there, one of the women with an accent. You'd think that would make you easier to tell apart from the others, but as it turns out, no.
Oh, hello, one of the other tired men.
Hello. I just popped in because from the sound of that bell, we must be in a shop or something. Not stopping, actually. I just came in to say that as we're nearly at the end of the episode, we must be due an incredibly minor cliffhanger.
I dare say you're right. And it's just struck me. This coffee you've made, will there be enough to go round?
I don't know, Kathy or whoever. I really don't know.
Dumpty diddly dumpty 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 diddly dumpty dumpty.
And then, when I shouted at him, he got all injured and said he thought it would be romantic.
Romantic? He hacked your email and thought it would be romantic.
I know. I mean, he could have just asked you who I wanted him to invite. But no, he keylogged my password and he expects me to swoon.
I've got a worse one. I had a boyfriend once who asked if he could touch my eye.
Your eye?
Yeah, not the lid. My actual eyeball.
What?
No, wait, it gets worse. He said he wanted to do it because it was a part of me no one else had ever touched before.
Oh, God. So, simultaneously incredibly creepy and implying you're a bit of a slapper.
Exactly. This is the same guy who proposed to me with a megaphone in Trafalgar Square.
No.
Yep, after 4 months.
No.
I said no, quietly. He said, she says no, into the megaphone. 400 people booed me.
Well, this guy I was seeing, we were on holiday. We spent all morning hiking up to this gorge, so I was hot and sweaty, but still, it was beautiful. He gets down on one knee, gets out a ring box, opens it up, diamond ring. Asks me to marry him. I open my mouth to reply. He says one thing before you answer. Takes the ring out of the box, throws it in the gorge.
But what did he think he was doing?
Oh, God, no. Some stupid thing about materialism, or it might have been feminism. I was too angry to listen. I didn't want a sodding diamond, but I definitely didn't want him to spend £5,000 on being a smug git.
What a knob.
He really was.
Men, don't try to be clever. The men in these stories were hapless idiots, but so are you. They all try to be original, to think differently. Do not do this! Be unoriginal. Think samely. The acceptable romantic gestures are in order. Flowers, dinner, presents of something she mentioned ages ago and then forgot about. And proposal should be somewhere nice, with a ring, private enough for her to say no if she wants to. Men only get away with any variation on these in Hollywood movies. And that's because the same person gets to write what he does and what she thinks about it. You don't get to do that. So stick to the stuff that works. And always keep the receipt.
It was just an ordinary day. I was at work just finishing up a report when suddenly, out of nowhere, it happened.
Stephen, when you finish that, could you type up all of these as well?
Oh, no.
Have you been bored at work? Thousands of people every year are forced to do jobs they find uncongenial or dull. Selena had to attend a 3-hour meeting on compliance. We got her £16,000. Rashid's boss used the phrase client-facing end-to-end services, and now he's Rashid's butler. Eddie had to do some filing he didn't want to do, and now he's the king of Spain. Call us now, because nothing bad should ever happen to you, and if it does, you should get a treat.
Hi, you're Gavin, yeah?
That's right.
And Paula Daly's your supervisor, yeah?
Yeah.
Great, yeah. I'm afraid Paul has called in sick today.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so my name's Megan. I'll be supervising you for today.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Great.
Great. Well, should we make a start, then?
Okay. So...
Oh, you mean I start?
Yeah.
Right. How do I start?
You want me to tell you how to supervise me?
If you would.
Surely then I'd be supervising you.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, well, okay then. First you tell me what areas you want me to focus on today.
What areas?
Yeah.
Areas of what?
That's up to you.
Can you give me some examples?
No, I think then I really would be supervising you.
Okay. Well, can you at least tell me what you do?
I'm an assistant.
To whom?
To the supervisor.
Right.
Yeah.
So you assist Paula?
Yes, I assist her in her supervising, and she supervises my assistants.
And who actually does the work?
Mr. Collinson.
Right.
Yeah, technically I'm supposed to be his assistant, and Paula's supposed to be his supervisor, but he says he doesn't need assisting, and he refuses to be supervised, so Paula and I agreed to cut out the middleman and supervise/assist one another.
So how come Mr. Collinson gets his way so easily?
He's the only one who knows how the machine works.
And where is he?
No idea. He went on holiday in 2009 and never came back. He might be dead, or going away with the years might be part of how he does what he does. But the machine seems to work fine without him, so we just carry on.
And what does the machine do?
It emits a low hum.
Yeah, but why? What's it doing?
No idea. Mr. Collinson won't tell us.
Okay. So, I watch you and you watch the machine?
No, watching the machine is part of Mr. Collinson's job. You watch me and I help you watch me, and you watch me helping you and I help you to do so. And so on.
Okay. Well, then, today I'd like you to focus on doing what you just said.
Okay. Here's some paper if you want to make notes on my performance.
Oh, thank you. Hand it to me more squarely.
Oh, like this.
Very good. I'll make a note of that.
I'll help.
Handed paper squarely.
There's an E in squarely.
Thank you. You know, I think we're going to make a great team.
My dog doesn't know he's ugly. My dog doesn't know he's old. My dog just knows if he's hungry, thirsty, horny, hot or cold. My dog doesn't know he's ugly, and that's why people stare. And even if my dog did know, my dog just wouldn't care. My dog is sweet and gentle, but he's uglier than sin. He shed most of his fur and now he's started shedding skin. My dog's eye is always twitching and his lip is always curled. My dog looks like he's plotting the destruction of the world. My dog doesn't know he's ugly. My dog doesn't know he's old. My dog still struts around like he's some canine centerfold. My dog doesn't know he's ugly, or that he'll cease to be. Perhaps that's why my dog seems so much happier than me. My dog's right eye is bloodshot and his left one's milky white. His last few teeth are clustered in a hideous overbite. My dog is almost blind but hasn't noticed yet at all. So his skull's all creased from where he keeps on running into walls. But my dog doesn't know he's ugly. My dog doesn't know he's old. My cat keeps trying to tell him, but my dog just won't be told. My dog doesn't know he's ugly. My dog still thinks he's glam. I wish I were more like my dog. Oh God, perhaps I am.
Stella, my love, would you send Pythagoras of Samos in? Hi, good to see you. How are you? How's Samos?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, before the main event, news just in. We've sold the theorem to Thessaly, Macedonia, and we're in talks with Thrace.
Oh, that's great.
What can I tell you? Five people love your theorem, but not as much, I bet, as they're going to love your new theorem.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Yeah, I'm so excited about this. I could barely sleep last night trying to guess what new thing I was going to find out today about triangles.
Well, actually, this one's about hexagons.
Oh, hexagons?
Yes.
So, drum roll, please. Pythagoras's second theorem. I'm so excited.
Pairs of opposite sides of a hexagon inscribed in any conic section meet in three collinear points.
Wow. Right. Okay.
You don't like it, do you?
I do.
Yeah, but not like you like the first one.
Oh, well. Look, Pyth, you know, first of all, don't worry. Everyone has a difficult second theorem. It's just that first one, you know, it had more bite. It kind of started with a bang. The square on the hypotenuse, boom! Right there in the middle of the action. I want to know what the hell a hypotenuse is, why it's got a square on it, and what it's going to do about it. It's equal to, bam, straight away the story's moved on. It's about equality now. Equal to what? We have to know. The sum of the squares on the other two sides. Kapow! Mind blown, never saw it coming. It's a beautiful, beautiful theorem. And I just wonder if this new one, which, don't get me wrong, has a lot of potential, I just wonder if it could use some of that magic.
Well, what do you suggest?
Hey, I don't know. I'm not the mathematician.
No, you're not.
But maybe, maybe, look, Pipe, you're going to hate this. It has to be said, Pipe. Is there a place in this one for the hypotenuse?
No, it's not a corollary. It's a whole new theorem.
Of course it is, of course it is. But, wow, people love the hypotenuse. It's your own fault, you talented bastard. You created a theorem so compelling, people just have to know more. What else is the hypotenuse equal to? What is it not equal to?
That's not what you said when I first brought it to you. You said no one knew what the hypotenuse was and it had a silly name and people would get it mixed up with a hippopotamus.
Did I say that? I don't think I said that.
Anyway, I couldn't put it in even if I wanted to. Hexagons don't have hypotenuses.
Yeah, well, since you bring it up, are we sure about the hexagons? Do people really care about hexagons the way they care about triangles? I mean, when it comes right down to it, Pi, people join up 3 points all the time. How many times do they join up 8?
6. Huh? Well, hexagons have 6 vertices.
Well, look, there you go. Now, triangles, Pipe, go back to triangles. Triangles are what people want you to tell them stuff about.
Yeah, but I don't have anything new to say about triangles.
Oh, Pipe, let me let you into a secret. People don't want new theorems. They want exactly the same theorems they enjoyed before, but very slightly different.
Okay, so what I might as well say is that my second theorem is the sum of the squares on the other two sides is equal to the square on the hypotenuse.
What? Did you just come up with that off the top of your head?
Yeah, but I mean, it's not...
I knew you were a genius, Python. I didn't know you were a bloody genius. Stella, my love, send in an amphora of coffee, a scribe and a copyright lawyer. We've struck mouse gold.
Hello. You can't come in here, sir. This is a building. Sir.
Yes, I know. I saw your sign outside. Your new cinema is coming this spring.
Yes?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh.
Well, the only thing is, and I don't really know how to say this without sounding terribly ungrateful, but I'm afraid you're building it in the wrong place.
The wrong...
Yes, you see, I don't actually live in this city. I'm only visiting for the day to punish my godson. So, look, here is a map of my village. I was thinking if we built my new cinema here...
It's not your cinema, not just for you, it's for everyone.
Oh, I see, a gift to the people. Well, that's still exciting. The nation's first state-owned free cinema.
It's not state-owned, you'll still have to pay.
Oh, into a collective pot to pay for upkeep?
No, you'll pay us.
We'll pay you? You mean... You're building this cinema for us to come and pay you to watch films in?
Yes, obviously.
Well, forgive me that this is beginning to sound a lot like your cinema.
Of course it's our cinema.
Then kindly put that on the bloody sign. Good day.
Hello and welcome to the interview sketch. My name is Patsy Straightwoman and I'm joined today by Leonard Chael, actor, director and bon viveur.
Hello.
So, Len, you graduated from RADA in 1963. You were young, handsome.
Thank you, my dear.
You had London at your feet. Those must have been great times.
Oh, they were. They were wonderful, wonderful times. You know, the parties, the clothes, the booze.
And a lot of sex.
Ah. Well, I'm not proud of it, you know, but I admit a certain amount of bonking did go on. You must remember, my dear, that's just what one did in those days. You'd roll out of a nightclub with a couple of dollies, stagger to one's jag, drive to the hotel, very wrong, of course, to drink and drive, awfully bad, and then you bonk the night away.
But of course you were married.
I was. Yeah, poor Helen, I think she was always rather irritated by all the bonking. I suppose I did behave really awfully badly to her, but there you are.
So you were a serial adulterer?
No, nothing like that. No, this was just bonking.
I see. And I believe that about that time you also committed a number of murders.
Oh, dear me. You have done your homework, haven't you? Well, look, I'm not proud of it. But yes, I did occasionally indulge in a spot of bumping off.
What was the first one?
Oh, dear. Well, this is a very long time ago. I'm very ashamed of it now, of course. But I was in Rep in Leicester, and there was this chap in the company, Rex Fortescue. Very handsome chap. Awfully good actor. And you see, all the ladies in the company, they only had eyes for him. So I thought to myself, and I suppose this is terribly naughty, really. Well, I thought, well, Lenny, if you're going to get any bonking done at all this season, you're just going to have to bump him off.
Kill him?
Oh, no, not kill him, no. Just bump him off.
To death?
Yes.
And that wasn't the last bumping off you committed, was it?
No, I can't honestly say it was. No, for my sins.
Your sins including murder.
Bumping off, yes.
So who were your other victims?
Oh, well, let me see. Ruby Keane, I bumped her off. George Grover, lovely man. Beautiful voice, I bumped him off. And poor Ellen, of course. As I say, I did behave terribly badly to her, really. First with all the bonking and then later with bumping her off.
And are your bumping off days behind you now?
Well, if there are any policemen listening, then yes, they certainly are, officer. No, do you know, the truth is, I have given it up, largely. You see, I've got most of the things I want in life now, so, you know, I go to the trouble. Plus, I don't have the strength in my arms that I used to. And, of course, it's wrong.
Leonard Chale, actor, director and murderer.
Bumper offer.
Bumper offer. Thank you.
It was just an ordinary day. We were at home watching a DVD of No Country for Old Men when suddenly it happened.
Oh, is that the end?
But what happened to the hitman? Aren't they going to tell us?
Aww.
Have you been disappointed by the end of a film? Call us now and find out how much you could be owed for mental trauma and unresolved narrative stress. Lena had no idea what the hell was going on by the end of Inception. And won £50,000. Jack saw the twist in Secret Window coming a mile off and was given a gold statue of himself and a loved one. Marcia organised an M. Night Shyamalan marathon and now basically owns the world. Call us now. We'll kiss it better for you with cash.
Well, since you have asked me for a tale of Christmas cheer, I can do no better than to relate the curious story of Christopher Must Cheer, which, aptly enough, is also set at Christmas time. Although, rather less aptly, it's unremittingly bleak. And Christopher Must Cheer was trudging his weary way home from his office at the Toy Crusher Corporation. Over the years, many people had asked why, when Mr. Toy and Mr. Crusher first went into business together, they didn't at the very least consider calling it the Crusher Toy Corporation. But, as old Silas Crusher used to say, with a twinkle in his eye, when all said and done, we do crush toys. As Christopher reached his front door, his eye was suddenly drawn to the knocker, which for a moment had seemed to bear an uncanny resemblance to his dear old childhood friend, Rufus. But then, must Cheer reasoned to himself, it must be remembered that Rufus was a lion and never went anywhere without a brass ring in his mouth. So in a way, it was surprising this hadn't struck him before. Inside, Christopher was greeted by his wife, whose name was also funny when followed by the surname Must Cheer, although I can't remember for the moment what it was.
Darling, you did promise you'd be home in time to see the children hang up their stocking.
Yeah, I know, darling, but the big crusher's malfunctioning. Can't you see I'm covered in Etch-a-Sketch dust?
At that, his little son Barney, whose name was not funny when followed by Must Cheer because his parents didn't want him teased, stirred from his sleep.
Merry Christmas, Daddy.
Yeah, that's not till tomorrow, son, but you have a lovely day.
But you'll be there, won't you?
What? On Christmas Day, son? That's the busiest day in the professional Toy Crusher's calendar. In fact, I think I might take your Christmas presents with me, if that's all right. Help the boys in the crusher room get a head start on the rush.
Christopher went to bed, wondering if his son would ever forgive him. And also wondering how it was that his son was sort of Disney American, given that his wife was 1940s and he was normal. That night, he slept badly. Was it his troubled mind? Was it the December chill? Or was it the ghost of a lion standing on his chest? Unusually, it turned out to be the last one.
Rufus, is that you? Rufus, for once, can you take that brass ring out of your mouth?
Very well. Yes, Christopher, it is your old childhood friend, here to show you the error of your ways. Come!
Lord Rufus!
Come with me 30 years hence.
And in a moment, Christopher found he and Rufus were standing in a vast room, and there, behind the desk, busily working away on office equipment that was a bit futuristic, but not as much as you'd think. was himself.
So I become CEO of Toy Crusher.
Yes, yes you do,
said the magic lion sadly. Just then, the futuristic equivalent of a door did the futuristic equivalent of opening, and in strode Barney, now a strapping young man in the prime of life, 6'4" and strong as an ox.
Daddy, I must speak to you.
Not now, Barney.
Bart, future Christopher.
You know how busy I am at Christmas.
I know it all right. I've never spent a single Christmas with you in my life. Come with me now, Father, or I'll never speak to you again.
Oh, don't be so overdramatic. It's only Christmas.
It's not just Christmas. It's everything. Goodbye, Father, no longer.
Goodbye. No, and tell your mother I'll be home late.
Mother left you 20 years ago. She's happily remarried now to a man who notices if she's there.
And what of your sister?
My sister? You cared so little for my sister, you didn't even bother to set her up earlier in the story.
And so saying, Barney left the office, slamming the door behind him, which really annoyed old Christopher because it was a futuristic door and they don't work like that. But it didn't annoy him for long, because almost immediately he had a heart attack and died.
And that is what will happen if I don't change my ways.
Said young Christopher.
Yes, Christopher, it is.
I'll get to be CEO.
Yes, but you die bitter and alone.
Yes, but let me just check. I mean, I am going to die anyway. I mean, immortality's not on the table.
No, of course you're going to die.
Right. Well, you see, before I die, I really want to be CEO. I mean, that's why I work so hard. It's not just a coincidence.
But you don't spend enough time with your family.
I know. That's a trade-off I've been making all this time. I'm not an idiot. And hang on a minute. You're saying that if I carry on doing what I'm doing now, you know, hedging my bets and making some token sacrifices for family life, I still get to be CEO. So imagine what I could achieve if I ignore them completely. Thank you, Rufus. This vision has really opened my eyes this Christmas Eve. From now on, I'm going to be a total bastard.
Right. Christopher, are you familiar with the concept of an oral surrogate?
No.
Well, for instance, it's when a mother gives a child a dummy to stop it sucking its thumb.
Really? So what?
Well, Christopher, did you never wonder why my mother always made me carry a brass ring in my mouth when I came to play with you?
Was she worried about you sucking your thumb?
No, Christopher, that's not what she was worried about.
And with that, boys and girls, Rufus the Magic Christmas Lion bit the awful man's head off.
Wow!
Good night! John Finnemore's souvenir programme was written by and star John Finnemore with Margaret Caborn-Smith, Simon Kane, Laurie Lewin and Carrie Quinlan. Original music was by Susanna Pierce and the producer was Ed Murray. Have you bitten your own tongue? Yeah, you're probably on your own there.